is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible entity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The atomic description of the Srimad Bhagavatam is almost the same as the modern science of atomism, and this is further described in the Paramanuvada of Kannada. In modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. Srimad Bhagavatam is the full text of all descriptions of knowledge, including the theory of atomism. The atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. So the translation, the material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible entity, identity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. So this is the first verse of the famous chapter on calculation of time from the atom. And in this chapter it is described that the material manifestation is made up of particles called atoms. In Western science, the concept of an atom is coming from the Greeks. It is commonly said that an ancient Greek named Democritus created the idea of the atom. It's quite possible that he got this idea from India. It is known that there was Indian influence in ancient Greek thinking. For example, the doctrines of Pythagoras have many elements which come from India, including the idea of reincarnation, the idea that you should be a vegetarian, and even the so-called Pythagorean theorem. The Pythagorean theorem is a famous theorem of mathematics about the squares on the sides of a right triangle. The sum of the areas of the two squares on the sides equals the area on the hypotenuse, the square on the hypotenuse. Well, this is commonly called the Pythagorean theorem, after Pythagoras, but it appears in the Silva Shastras in India. These are mathematical texts which have the practical purpose of designing altars for fire sacrifices, and they contain a great deal of what we call geometry, and the Pythagorean theorem is also stated there. It's quite possible that this concept of the atom came into the ancient Greek world from India. Among the Greeks and Romans, atomism was associated with an underlying philosophy of materialism. For example, Democritus claimed that nothing really exists except atoms and the void. So that means, he specifically denied the reality of sensations, conscious perceptions. He said, these are just conventions in human society, but what really exists is nothing but atoms in the void. There was also a Roman philosopher named Lucretius who expounded the theory of atomism, and he was also very much a materialist. So atomism has been associated with materialism, and of course the modern scientific theory of the atom is also connected with materialism. Interestingly enough, the philosopher Kannada in India is basically presenting a materialistic viewpoint. So here the Bhagavatam is mentioning the atom, but even in India, discussion of atoms has been connected with materialistic philosophy to a very large extent. So the atom is a very mysterious entity. Of course, the word atom from Greek means indivisible. So the idea is the atom is the smallest particle into which things can be divided, and an atom cannot be divided further. However, the atom of modern chemistry can be divided. So basically, the word atom is simply used to apply to it. So basically, the history of physics in the 20th century has been, you might say, the search for the ultimate atom. Because it was found that the atom of chemistry can be divided into electrons, protons, neutrons. But then, are these the ultimate particles? At one time, it was thought that these particles could not be divided further. But now it's believed that a proton can be divided into quarks. Actually, the names for these different particles became a little bit humorous after a while. So the quarks are said to have properties such as strangeness, charm, and color. So this is all tongue-in-cheek, of course. The idea of the atom in physics is basically is ultimately dependent on the concept of a quantum. There's a whole subject in physics called quantum mechanics, which is understood on a formal level in the sense that the physicists can do calculations with it, but it's not understood philosophically. Even today, there's a great deal of controversy over just what quantum mechanics means, and no one has really figured it out yet. So the atom is something quite mysterious. Here Srila Prabhupada says that the atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. So it would be nice if we had more information about that. Certainly interesting, but I don't really know what it means. A bit further here, we have a verse which says that atomic time is measured according to its covering a particular atomic space. The time which covers the unmanifest aggregate of atoms is called the great time. So, that is also interesting. But nonetheless mysterious. In any case, we have the idea here that somehow matter is made up of small units. Now, the size given for atoms in the Bhagavatam is a bit large from the point of view of modern science. Text 5 states that 6 atoms can actually be seen in the sunshine which enters through the holes of the window screen. So back in the 1970s, there was some, when this chapter first came out, there was some discussion of whether one could actually see this. Some devotees were looking at window screens. Some say they could see it and some not. I must admit I never saw anything. But something that could be seen is much bigger than the atom of modern science. So that factor is there. Then again, the rate at which atoms interact that is given in the Bhagavatam is rather slow. It is stated here, the time duration needed for the integration of 3 trasa renus. Trasa renu is described in this previous verse as a group of 6 atoms. So this is called a truti. So an account is given of what a truti is, and if you do the calculation, you find that if you divide a second into 1,687.5 parts, that is 1 truti. So that is said to be the time needed for the integration of 3 trasa renus. But this is quite slow from the point of view of the modern scientific idea. Operations involving many atoms go much faster than that. For example, in computers, you talk about millions of instructions per second, or MIPS. But one computer instruction involves a lot of complicated operations in the computer, and you can have millions of those in a second, whereas here we're talking about 1,700 operations in a second. So it's not clear exactly why this is, but certainly the basic concept of the atom is there in the Vedic literature. There are also different values given for the Truti. The value I just mentioned is given here in the Bhagavatam. But in, for example, the Surya Siddhanta, a figure is also given for the Truti, and that's 1/20th the length of the Truti given in the Bhagavatam. So there are different values for these different figures. So the various time durations in Vedic literature are summed up here in this chapter, starting with the Truti and working all the way up to the Kalpa, or Day of Brahma. So these are interesting units. From the point of view of ordinary life, it's hard to see what the value would be for the Truti, namely a 17,000th of a second, or 1,700th of a second, rather, is not a measurement that has any practical value in ordinary life, but nonetheless it's there in the Vedic calculations. On the other hand, the largest units of time in the Vedic system come to about 4,320,000,000 years. So that's also quite a large period of time. This verse that describes the atomic time is suggestive of an interesting point mentioned in the Surya Siddhanta. It's said here that the time which covers the unmanifest aggregate of atoms is called the great time. In the Surya Siddhanta, the, let's see, one kalpa is taken to be the time of the what is called the orbit of heaven, or the orbit of the Brahmanda. So different orbital periods are given, and the orbital period for the Brahmanda is the time that it would take a planet moving at the speed of the moon in its orbit to travel the circumference of the universe. So this calculation is given in the Surya Siddhanta. That comes out to one kalpa, or one day of Brahma. So that's at least suggested by this statement about time covering the unmanifest aggregate of atoms, because of course the time to go all the way around the universe, all of the atoms. But of course that's not by any means definite. The main problem that we're faced with, don't have very many details to go on. So after giving a bit about atoms, there's a description of various lengths of time. Is the prana, which is 4 seconds in terms of our time measure. Prana literally means would be the time of one breath. It turns out that a prana, at this from a geocentric viewpoint, you can say the sun goes all the way around the earth in one day. Out once is the time it takes the sun to move 1 minute of arc. So in this way, your lifetime is draining away. With each breath, the sun moves a minute of arc, and that's 1 minute are mentioned here, coming up to the lagu, which is 2 minutes. Two dandas make one muhurta, Brahma muhurta. There are different muhurtas in the course of the day, and actually they all have the Jyotisha Shastra, is that in one day of 24, and two gatikas is a muhurta. And that tells you that in a muhurta there are 48 minutes. So that's somewhat less than an hour. So the one day and night, 24 hours, is of course mentioned. And 15 days is called a paksha. And 2 days, two pakshas, is 1 month. So it is said that this means a month of 30 days. So this is a solar month. And it is said that the time of 1 day and night on the Pitri Loka, the planet of the forefathers, is in fact 1 month of 30 days. So their daytime period is 15 days and their nighttime period is 15 days. Then it turns out that 12 of these months is said to be 1 year, which means that a year lasts 360 days, which is an interesting statement, because we find that a year lasts 365 and a quarter days. So if you're off by 5 1/4 days in the length of the year, then you can see that, for example, over 10 years, you'd be off by, about 50 days. So that's quite a big discrepancy. So it's interesting that in various ancient cultures in the world, the tradition used to be that the year lasts 360 days. For example, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and the ancient Chinese all had a year of 360 days. But at a certain point, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, they changed and adopted a year of 365 days. So that's a curious thing. One wonders if the length of the year underwent a shift. Of course, we don't know, but that is the tradition. Actually, if you look in the Bhagavatam, you'll find that a year is always given as 360 days, and you don't find mention of 365. So, let's see, going up from the year, various lengths of time are given. There's an interesting point made on relative lengths of time. I mentioned Pitriloka. In the Bhagavatam, it is also said that 1 year is a day of the demigods. So 360 days would be 1 day of the demigods, which means that their time scale is different. Now, if you go up to still higher planets, demigods would mean the inhabitants of Swargaloka. If you go up to still higher planets, you find that the time units are still longer. So 1 day of Brahma comes out to 4,320,000 years. So this period of time is divided into yuga cycles. So it's described that, the structure of the yuga cycles is interesting. The basic unit for Kali Yuga is 1,000 years of the demigods. And at the beginning and end of this, you add 1/10 of that period, and that's called the Yuga Sandhi. So that adds another 200 years of the demigods. So the Kali Yuga comes out to 1,200 years of the demigods. But if you want to convert that into our years, you'd have to multiply by 360. And that gives you 432,000 years for the Kali Yuga. So then 2 times the Kali Yuga is the Dwapara Yuga. 3 times the Kali Yuga is the Treta Yuga. And 4 times is the Satya Yuga. And if you add up Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, that gives you 1 yuga cycle. So 4 + 3 + 2 + 1 = 10. So that means 10 times the length of the Kali Yuga is 1 yuga cycle. So the sandhis are there for the other yugas also. So the sandhi, length of the sandhi for, Kali Yuga would come out to 36,000 years. And it's described that in the Yuga Sandhi periods, different religious activities are typically performed. So we're now actually in the Yuga Sandhi of the Kali Yuga, of this particular Kali Yuga. So the really severe manifestation of the age of Kali hasn't begun yet. So for those of you who really enjoy our present state of human society, you can know that it's going to get much worse. Actually, it's interesting that the golden age of Lord Chaitanya occurs during the Yuga Sandhi. Srila Prabhupada has referred to this as lasting 10,000 years. And in fact, in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it is described that after 5,000 years of Kali Yuga, there will be a 10,000 year period in which Krishna's devotees are very prominent on the earth. So that's one Shastric reference for this golden age of 10,000 years. Since about 5,000 years of Kali Yuga have now elapsed, that means that the This 10,000-year golden age is about to begin, or has just begun. So that indicates that from a spiritual point of view, things should be very auspicious for the next 10,000 years. But after that, one shouldn't want to be around on the Earth planet. So, let's see. Those are some observations on time. I'll just mention there are also Sandhya periods in connection with the Yuga cycles. I mentioned those. And yeah, I was going to mention that 71 Yuga cycles constitutes one age of Manu, or Manvantara period. And there are 14 Manvantara periods in one day of Brahma. But if you multiply out 14 times 71, you'll see that it doesn't come out to 1,000 Yuga cycles. But the detail there is that at the beginning and end of each Manvantara, there's another sandhi of the length of one Satya Yuga. So if you add those in, then it comes out to 1,000 Yuga cycles. So that's the situation there. So a few observations on time in the atom. Are there any questions? Yeah?
Are we to take that as a statement of Adam, the Bhagavatam, a sort of generic description of that which is the smallest indivisible unit, as opposed to what we learned as atoms, which consists of photons, neutrons, and electrons?
Well, all we know from the description here is, of course, Srila Prabhupada translates this first text to say that the atom is indivisible. Now, actually in the Sanskrit, unless ultimate is taken to mean indivisible, which logically it really does, because if you can divide it, then how can you say that it's the ultimate particle? So it would seem to me that indivisible is taken from the word ultimate here, charama. And then, of course, there's the very name, which is Parama Anu. And Parama means the most, the supermost. And Anu would be this particle, little particle. So the ultimate particle, then, is the atom. So if you ask, then, what do atoms correspond to, say, in modern science, it couldn't be the atom of chemistry. Now, when you come to protons and the quarks that supposedly make them up, the trouble is, if you go into what is called particle physics, you find a huge array of different kinds of particles. For example, quarks are held together by gluons. Yeah, as I say, the physicists are becoming a little bit humorous. And so on and so forth. But basically, we have the idea of little quantized units of things. Interestingly enough, the soul is even called chit kana. Chit means consciousness, and again you see ana, which is like that word anu. So the soul, in a sense, is an atom of consciousness, and of course the soul cannot be divided. So that is there. Any other questions? Yeah?
Axiomatic truths that a scientist must accept in the field of physics.
The axiomatic truths that a scientist must accept in physics.
They can't prove, but they must accept them.
Well, indeed, there are so many things that the scientist cannot prove. And basically, what you have in physics is a system of formulas which work nicely. Now, the reason that they work, you can say in practical terms, is that lots of people have been adjusting them and fixing them up over the years so that they do work. In other words, if they find they don't work in some way, then they correct the formulas until they do work. So you have a system of formulas that work. Now, it's amazing that they work as well as they do. Even some physicists have written about that. They're astonished.